Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below.
Learn from one of the leaders of the regenerative agriculture movement in Portugal, straight from one of the driest and emptiest places in Europe, where climate change or climate weirding is hitting really hard. Why a former forest engineer overcame her doubts about syntropic agroforestry. Enjoy. This is the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast, Investing as if the planet mattered, where we talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities, and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why my focus on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land and our sea, grow our food, what we eat, wear, and consume. And it's time that we as investors, big and small, and consumers start paying much more attention to the dirt/soil underneath our feet. To make it easy for fans to support our work, we launched our membership community, and so many of you have joined us as a member. Thank you. If our work created value for you, and if you have the means, and only if you have the means, consider joining us. Find out more on gumroad.com/investinginregenag. That is gumroad.com/investinginregenag. Or find the link below.
So just as the wind picks up, which is going to happen a bit, but that's fine because we're outside. So welcome to another episode of this podcast. Again, yet again, an amazing location. We're surrounded by trees in a landscape that doesn't have that. We're surrounded by life, which you're going to hear for sure. Either the insects that are feeding on the orange tree above us or the dogs around, some cats and some other wildlife. I'm here with Marta, one of the co-founders of Terra Sintrópica. We're here in Portugal and we're going to definitely unpack what kind of amazing place or oasis that shouldn't stay an oasis, but at the moment is, we are hosted by today. So first of all, thank you for being here and thank you for allowing us to record here. And I'm very much looking forward to unpacking where we are and of course what million other projects you're working on and are going to work on in the future. So welcome.
Thank you. You are very welcome here.
And to start, where are we? I mean, we're in Mértola, which is in the center south, or how do you describe it, of Portugal? But we're in a very special place. So if you normally introduce yourself and say, what is the farm we're on, which is a research farm, like what should people imagine at the moment is around us when they're listening to this in a couple of weeks or months or years, because this will be online for a long time to come. So where are we? And as visually as possible, please.
So we are in a Malhadinha. There is a small farm in Mértola, and Mértola is one of the driest places in Portugal. But my husband is a farmer and he looks at more than 10 years ago, he was looking for a good place to start his dream of farming, at the time with herbs, organic herbs. And we found this beautiful place that was a small farm from the archaeological research camp in Mértola that was abandoned. And actually, it had been a fire here and it was everything a little bit destroyed. Yeah. So he started here. Making organic herbs, but as I said, we were in one of the driest places, so at some point he had to stop because the soils here are quite bad. We have problems of lack of water all years. Every year we have extreme drought, and so at some point he had to start farming because it was really
so
very
even the
difficult.
Herbs, which some yeah. who are not deep in farming might say, okay, but it actually can thrive also with very little water. Yeah. We're suffering here.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means so, that just says something about the yeah. challenging conditions yeah. we're in.
He chose to do herbs because of that, because it's something that's really don't need so much water. But at the end, we had come at that time, it was like 6 to 7 years of drought, and he really had to quit. Yeah. And then he started to look, what other solutions we can have around the world that could be possible to use here in Mertula. Because, yeah, it's quite difficult here, and the climate scenarios show us that it's not going to be better. But actually there is also other places worse than Mertula that they are using regenerative solutions that can be interesting. So we start to study a little bit of that. And
how do you do that? You just start Googling, you start asking people, you start looking for places which are worse and which are thriving?
Well, we are always doing that, and like looking for innovation, but also different solutions in many things, many places. And syntropic farming was one of the options, but actually we thought that was something that was only possible in South, in Global South and more tropical areas and not in the Mediterranean. But at some point, Ernst Goetsch was here, and also Philippe Pazzini and Diana Andrade that actually chose to live here for a while. And Antonio, my husband, decided that he had nothing to lose, so he would like to try a little bit. So he started this brave idea of trying to translate what syntropic farming could be in a Mediterranean and semi-arid place as Mertula is. And in the first year he understood that he could grow vegetables and herbs and fruits together, even in the summer, with much less water than he used to use. And so he came here to Malhadinha again, and it was very beautiful. There was a very beautiful moment when he, with the group of people, friends, volunteers, just take out all the black plastic that was covering the soil, because it was organic and supposedly was the only way to
grow,
to grow without invasive plants and things like that. And the soil was completely compacted. Yeah, because you see with this heat that we have here, like 40 degrees in the summer. Well, we are in April and there is 30 degrees today. So you can imagine when you go with 40, 45, things like that in the summer. And to have 7 years, the soil completely covered with the black plastic. Yeah,
it's being cooked, so, basically. Yeah,
yeah, burned, yeah, too. Yeah. And that was supposedly a good practice in organic farming. Yeah, so he really, I don't want this anymore. So, with a group of friends, we take out all the black plastic that we have here, and we start in a different way with using the syntropic approach. And so these days we have this farm that you can see. We have here a lot of trees. We have functional trees that we use just to prune and have biomass, but we have a lot of fruit trees, bushes, and vegetables and herbs all growing together. And he can take out like 4 to 5 tons of food per year now here, just putting water once a week. What is really completely different than what happened that normally, and in this region, people that have vegetables and fruits, they put water like
daily.
Every day, and sometimes in the summer, two times per day. Yeah. So, and you really can. So you can see we are now in the spring. So everything is start flowering now. It's very difficult here also the weather, because we almost don't have spring, we are in the winter, it's quite cold.
Boom.
Until March, middle March, and suddenly you see we are already in 30 degrees. So we really have here to translate how we can adapt not only to the weather conditions, the soil conditions, but also the species. What plants can we use, and how can we use these plants in order for them to be adapted to this very challenging climate that we have here? But it's really nice to be here and you see, okay, but it's possible. It's difficult, but it's possible. We have to translate it. Now we don't see anymore this compacted soil. We see a black soil with mycorrhizas and mycelium all around. When we touch the soil, we see everything covered, but not with plastic, with mulch. It is much more beautiful. And we can grow much more quantity of food. That is very nice.
Yeah, and I think I will definitely link below in the show notes interview we did with Felipe and also some more on syntropic farming and that translation to a different, because it's been often, I mean, it's been, I think, 30, 40 years even in Brazil, very well known in Latin America, very well known in the tropics, very little known outside. And I think the last 5 years or so, we see different projects starting to translate these methods into other contexts, and for sure everybody says it's not possible because you need the rain, you need the humidity, you need the labor, you need X, Y, Z, you need other species, and basically people are starting to show that the principles are the same, the species are different, and the context is different, but it doesn't mean like trees want to thrive in certain methods and they thrive just the same. They might grow slightly slower in certain climates, they might grow slightly faster in others, but you see the example here, because if you compare the hectares you have and you manage, or Antonio manages, compared to everything around it, the difference is quite enormous. So just to give a bit of context, like, what's the normal farming method, or what do farmers in the region around you farm normally? And of course, then we see the difference with here, but what's the normal farming methods and crops / livestock that people farm here?
So here we have, in this part that is Mértula, we don't have irrigation systems, so it is mostly livestock. So the farms are normally big farms, large-scale farms, and they do cattle even if they don't have food to give them half of the year, or water to drink in the summer. So every summer we can see in the television the main farmers of Mértula asking to the government for measures to help them because we are in drought. But that happens every year. So it's not an exceptional ask for help. It's something that they have to ask every year. So no one asks, so why they keep doing? Or why they keep doing in this way? Because I also believe that if we change practices with livestock, it's also possible, but we have to change a lot in practices. So this is more or less what we have here. It is what is called a montado ecosystem, but quite different from more northern Portugal, in North Alentejo and Central Alentejo. We are in South Alentejo, we are near Algarve, it's interior, but here in this region most of the trees are dying. So we have very few trees and many of them have problems and they are dying. That is the holm oak or the cork oak, but normally here the holm oak, but very sparse, in the landscape, and many with problems of diseases. This is more or less the landscape. And then we also used to have gardens like that. So probably one of the things that is interesting in Mértula is that it is 1,200 square kilometers with very few people. We have 4.8 inhabitants for square kilometers.
Which is one of the lowest in Europe.
Yeah, it is. And we have like 100 and something, I'm not sure, 104 or 106 small populations. And that is quite difficult for planning, yeah. But I think probably one of the reasons that we have that, it was because in every place is that we have a little bit of fertility, that where a family start to grow. And that's
maybe a well, some water,
a garden. Yeah. So we have more or less small populations around a place that have some fertility on the soil and people could have a living and housing in there. But nowadays, almost these small gardens and places are abandoned. And this is quite interesting for us in our approach, because when we translate syntropic farming here, and people say, well, when we start, when Antonio started, everybody was saying, oh no, this is very stupid. It's completely impossible to bring syntropic farming to the Mediterranean and to Mertula. Come on. Now he's doing...
The trees will compete, will never grow. Die.
Okay. Yes, with this soil impossible, you don't have water. And then we have all this beautiful production. So we have a new theory. Okay, syntropic farming is possible here in these small gardens. Yeah, vegetable gardens, it's possible, but that's not our landscape. Yeah, it's not how you scale up.
Yeah?
And we ask this, okay, you say this is not for this region, but actually 50 kilometers from here, there is a lot of water because of the dam. So in there is the agriculture of fruits, vegetables and things like that with a lot of water. So first of all, we are showing that in the same climate, but very worst soils, it is still possible to have vegetables and fruits with much less water and helping the soil. So this is one first thing, very important. The second thing is, what is scale up? Scale up is that I have to do this in 50 hectares instead of 3, or scale up would be if I could improve all these 50 farms that are abandoned and put it so beautiful and productive like this one. So that would be scale up.
Or repeatability, yeah, which is a big theme in regenerative agriculture, because it's very easy to push things in a box and say that could never be scaled. If your idea is large monocultures that are exactly the same, where every mm-hmm. row is exactly the same, et cetera, et cetera, which is probably what got us into this mess to begin with. But if your idea is, how can it be repeated 50 times or 100 times, 50,000 times, why not? Then it's a very different question and a very different answer, probably. And so when you say that to people now that come up with the second, like, sort of the second version of why it doesn't work, because now it's mm-hmm. been proven it works, okay? And I think, okay, what would it mean on a landscape scale? What would we mean if we do 50 of these? What do people answer? How do they react to that? If you say, there used to be gardens around mm-hmm. here, like 50 or 100 probably. Mm-hmm. Imagine they all look like this.
Yeah, I think that the part they start to think about it. Yeah, I think that is very interesting. And actually, it's so interesting that we put that as a proposal to the community, because actually we work quite well with the local municipality, with local social institutions, schools and things like that. And that proposal led to an involvement with farmers, social institutions, that... What if we really teach others and scale up, and we could have more gardens like that? And that is already happened. For instance, we have like social institutions that work with elder people, and also they are the ones who make the food for some of primary schools. And we share the knowledge that about what we were doing, and now they have their own garden, and they have the food for their canteen to the elders and to the kids, okay? And we also start a program for receiving people here that want to learn about it. That was the idea that we have after we spoke with farmers and spread this idea of, okay, we are not interested. We more or less already know. We are always learning and doing errors, of course, but it's a constant process of learning. But we think we know enough at this moment.
And only 3 years in.
Like, yeah, let's
be,
yeah, 3 years.
To be comfortable with having people here.
And yes, we could think, well, now we could have a bigger farm or spread a little bit or ask for to rent or buy other land. But we thought that would be much more interesting if we could convince others or gave some enthusiasm to other people to do the same. And we talked with some farmers in the region. They are large-scale farmers, but all of them have a place like that is abandoned. And actually...
Because most farmers used to have, of course, their garden, their vegetable garden.
Yeah, of course. And just go back, just to say that we have done something, is that we ask to all canteens to give us their numbers of food, what they are buying of vegetables and fruits, quantities per year. And so we thought, okay, in everything here in Mertula, the fact that we are very isolated and with so less people is a disadvantage. But in respect to that, can be an advantage. It's much more easier to feed a small place than a big city. Yeah, and so we ask the canteens the quantities of food in vegetables and fruits that they buy. And we understood that just like 8, more or less, it depends a little bit, but let's say 6 to 10 small farms like that could ensure all the food sovereignty of Mertula for the canteens. That's easy.
It becomes achievable. It's achievable. And it's not crazy high. Like, yeah. 60 would be okay.
But yeah.
6 to 10 is like okay.
But then, where are these 6 farms with 6 farmers available to do? So we have these conversations with the farmers and they said, at 50 years ago, everything that people eat at Mertula came from my grandfather and other, and from my grandfather, yeah, that farm.
So there's a proudness involved as well.
Yeah, there was. But now people just buy foods on the shops and they are not interested in do it because it's too much work. They have to pay something. There is nobody interested in doing it. And so we start to think a little bit, okay, and if we try to build a program that could try to solve some of these things. So we have done a pilot program that was the idea of receiving like 3 or 4 people that want to learn farming, regenerative farming and syntropic farming also. And they could be here for 1 year. Because, you know, something that we learn is that also the more difficult is not the access to the land. Although there is a problem. Mm-hmm. There is a problem in access to land. And Antonio also felt that when he wants to start farming. And it was good that it was possible for him to do this partnership. But it is difficult, the access to land. But it's not the only condition. Because when you want to start as a farmer, but you are new on it and you don't have like a net of people helping you if your family was not in the business, and especially if you want to do it in a different way, it's really, really difficult. And in Portugal happens that many of the projects that are subsidized by public funds, European funds for young farmers that are not for farmers that are coming in the family, mm-hmm. that are not continuing the family business, after the 5 years, normally they quit. There is a big percentage of people that quit. And so we thought, okay.
How do we make sure they make it?
Yeah. So, because we have this meeting and the farmers say, okay, but what's your problem? You don't have land. We can have a deal here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can have a nice collaboration. And they even speak about money. It was really, we can collaborate. Yeah, we can collaborate. We would like to see these gardens with life again, with
close
food
to your
again.
Farm.
For many of them said, okay, for me, if we can only have baskets for my family, you can use it. Yes. Yeah, we would prefer to see this. Okay, so, okay, first problem we solved. Yeah, so let's think about it now, how we can bring people, how they can learn, but not only about give them the land, but give them the skills first, and not just the technical skills, mm-hmm. also the opportunity to experiment, to be a farmer,
mm-hmm. because, and to make mistakes.
Yeah, and then a third thing, to be a farmer in Mertula, mm-hmm. because you know there is a lot of people coming here, and it's really amazing how we have a project that started 3 years and we only have a website at 3 months, and there is more than 200 people that pass here from Mertula, just mouth to mouth, the people just come. But when it went to summer, many of them that say, oh, we love this, we love to work here, to learn with you, but not in the summer. So we create a program that people could stay here for 1 year, learning, experimenting by themselves. So they pass many time here working in practice with Antonio. They have theoretical lessons. Then if they pass this phase, they could experiment more in other place of the garden that the farmer gave us a plot that they could experiment for 4 months by themselves, making their errors, experimenting. And only after that, if they like, they could stay. They could have that partnership to have a place to
really farm. Yeah, to
yeah
for that, the production side.
Yeah, that was, and they had like a small grant also, because it was important for us. It was like if a small farmer, a familiar farmer, had right to have a guarantee.
Basic income.
Yeah. But not guarantee. A basic income, not guarantee, because have some conditions.
Yeah, okay. But at least you weren't completely dependent from day one on what you were producing, because you were still learning, meaning you needed to also to eat. Yeah,
and that was the idea. So if you are a small farmer producing food to your community, and you are also contributing for ecosystem services, basic ecosystem services like water and improving the soils and biodiversity, you should receive something. And then everything you sell, of course, you make profit of it, but not being so dependent that you are doing everything wrong because you are just thinking on how to sell or, okay, so that would be, so that was a small romantic idea, but I think that was very interesting, this pilot, to experiment this in Mertola.
And now what is the status of, let's say, the canteens on one side, the farmers, like the large-scale farmers, traditional ones, and the people that want to farm, like how, what's the current the current photo? If we had to take a photo of the project now, what would it be? What would it look like now?
So we see that in this part of the canteens we have an evolution, but it's everything goes quite slow. Yeah,
procurement is very slow. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In Alentejo, everything is slow, we say, but
except climate change, which is really fast.
Yeah, except climate change. Yeah, that we really see advancing quite fast, but our project, it's not about our farm, it's about local communities. So we understand many times that these changes are long term, and we really want to do it with the community, not alone. So it could be quite more interesting, like if we do some good partnerships with some chefs, with some interesting shops in Lisbon or Algarve maybe, and we were happy doing this small part piece of paradise here. We sell our products and everything was okay. Yeah, but that's really not our idea. The idea is really how we can do an agroecological transition in a semi-arid place. So we are, for instance, but for winning the canteens, it's not just about having the food. You have to win the guy who manages the canteen, the guy or the woman who do the food procurement, the cooker, the
lady. Because it might arrive slightly, looking slightly different or a bit more. Yeah.
The lady who works with the children and give the food to the children. Because at the end, if we already win all the others, but the person who is going to give the food says, "What is this? A lot of eggs. They don't like this. They won't eat this." Everything is messed up again. So what we decide as we are going step to step is also to involve them. So we are developing a project with Rebundance. It's a Rebundance idea from Lisbon that is food evolution. And this idea is to give training to farmers, but also to cookers. In Lisbon and Mertola, the project start more in Lisbon with a small part in Mertola. And now it's so in the contrary this year. And we bring the cookers of the schools of Mertola to this project. So the course have two parts. One is regenerative food and the other is regenerative farming. And we have like two classes in Saturday they divide, but Fridays they are together. It's more about empowerment, creative leadership, these kind of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, collaborative, how to collaborate using a little bit of a lot of design thinking and dragon dreaming and these kind of things. So, and it's very funny how we can empower also women that are working in the canteens that never thought that they would have training lessons with the best chefs of the country, actually. It's very funny. And for instance, ourselves, we have one space for dedicated to food in the village, in the center of the village. And our cooker have 65 years old.
We met her, yeah.
Yeah, Margarida. And she was never a cooker, yeah. A professional cooker in her life. She likes to cook. She cooks well, it's true. Yeah. But she was never a professional.
Whoever passes here, go for lunch. Yeah.
Yeah. She was never been a professional, and she never
not a trained one, not an official diploma.
But she never had done vegetarian food all her life. And suddenly, at 64, she starts
speaking about
working in a restaurant. Yeah. Doing, and when she accepted the challenge, was supposed to be like do meals for the volunteers, and now it's a restaurant open that everybody can go and eat in there the vegetables that come from Malhadinha. And
so she went to Lisbon to train with...
She was one of the... And so other two were from the canteens, and this year was a success, and we said we really have to continue this. This year we have more cookers of Mertula participating again on the program. So this is the step by step, and many times, not just step by step, we walk, for instance, that program was really cool, but not everything was a success. And we didn't quit or think, this is not... No, we thought, why? What was not good? Why something was not possible to continue? Because then we have a problem here, then we have a problem here. So what we have to think first to solve this problem? And for instance, one of the identified problems was that, we already have someone doing other nice garden in other place, but we need the cooker also to collaborate. Yeah. So this is a net of projects. This is not a project here, but a complex net of projects and institutions that are trying to collaborate for the same purpose. What makes it, as I said, much more slower, but also much more resilient.
And have you seen a shift in, let's say, the institutional side on a national level as well, on a regional level, on a local level, in the last years, as climate change here is hitting hard? Like, you're reaching levels now that were predicted for, I think, in 20, 30 years, you're having it now. Every year is a drought, so it's not a drought anymore, it's just summer. Have you seen a sense of urgency and a role of what agriculture and food could play? Because, of course, the other side of Portugal is very heavily irrigated, very large, let's say, infrastructure, and a very different kind of agriculture. Have you seen a growing interest in another way or another method which is much more resilient, focused on sustainability, regeneration, abundance? Has the interest shifted a bit, or are we still very early stage in that?
We are early stage, but it's growing. And I think I'm very lucky to see it. What we are doing here in Malhadinha, as it is small scale, and as I said before, people tend to say, oh, we cannot scale up. And also the fact that farmers that have big scale, they are not looking, as some of them say, well, it's interesting, but I cannot use it. Mm-hmm. I cannot use it in my land. And so for me, one important step was to be able to speak with them and have solutions for them.
And so the big farmer that says, oh, it's great to have this on my abandoned garden, but what do I do with the other 99% of my land?
Yes.
Help
so
me.
The idea of the small gardens with the big farmers was interesting.
It was a nice entry point.
Yeah. It was very good to enter with them. But we need other strategies. And I have the lucky to work in other institutions, that is ESDIM, that have a more regional approach. It works with 5 municipalities around Mertola, and not with Mertola, actually. But what is very good for me, because we can test local-based solutions, and then we can try to scale up in a regional approach with ESDIM. Okay? And so what was proposed between Mertola Municipality, Castro Verde and Ourique, that are neighbors municipalities, mm-hmm. to ESDIM, was to design a project on regenerative agriculture for livestock. And we designed that project.
Because you just mentioned the issues here are many people have livestock, mm-hmm. mostly because it's subsidized.
Yeah.
And they don't have water a big chunk of the summer and no feed half yeah. of the summer or half of the year.
Yes.
Which means it's a challenging industry.
It's very challenging. And look, if we ask to any farmer here, if tomorrow we close down the European funds on livestock, would you continue to be a farmer? The answer is no. Not, certainly not livestock. It's only possible, as they are doing, it's only possible because they have a lot of funds. And we see the result in the landscape.
Mm-hmm. Degraded, yeah. Overgrazed and undersought. Yeah.
We are in one of the most desertified areas of Europe. Yeah. So that is really not the solution, as they are doing.
But as you're talking to them, like what's your... Because I can imagine that could be quite an explosive conversation.
Like, yeah.
So everybody knows
I didn't talk
that.
Like yeah. that. Like, I don't speak like that with them.
Everybody yeah. knows that at some point the subsidies will change. Nobody knows yeah. when and how, etc. But it's probably not going to stay like this forever.
Yeah.
But so it could also be 10 years or 50, and it could be 5 or 2 or 3. Yeah.
So what we proposed to them was to, okay, we understand your problem, and I do. I really do. I think it's not their fault. They have the land. They have to be economically sustainable. So they are doing the only thing that they know with this policy that is possible to do in their farms. Okay. So what we propose to them, it's more or less what Antonio had done here. He saw a solution and he tried for himself. So we thought like more or less the same approach, but we give tools for learning and for testing without fear and without having any cost. So what we proposed to them was that, look, we know there is some techniques, for instance, the key line design, or for instance, the holistic management, yeah, that has been used in Australia, in Africa, North America, other places that are also semi-arid regions with good results. So we don't know much about it. It's true that we never tried, but what if we could learn something together and test without any cost to you, just to see what is the result? If we do that, let's go to learn together. Is that okay? And there were 3 farmers accepting this challenge.
How many did you ask?
We know that we didn't want to do not.
Were it like 50 or 10? Like
no, we were talking with someone and that
3 doesn't sound
see.
Like a lot. Yeah,
let's say
it's a small amount.
It is really a small amount.
We, like learning and experimentation without a risk.
Let's say we. One of the advantages of being few people is that we know each other.
Yeah.
So
you knew who to ask.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. And so 2 of them, because they are enthusiastic about these kind of things, and one of them, he's not an enthusiastic about of these kind of things, but he's an open person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, he's in charge of a farmers association. So it's also a stakeholder important mm-hmm. because people see what he's doing. Yeah, so there were 3 persons, 2 enthusiastic and a nice one.
Yeah.
Available
good to
test.
Have, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's it. And also we asked to the Farmers Association to be, yeah, so in order to get to the others,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And we start this project like with the methodology is called the consortium benchmarking, yeah. So what we propose, we get together in a workshop and presenting them these kind of solutions, and then to just collect all the doubts and skepticism that we could have about it. What we want to learn, what you think that is, no, this is not going to work.
Because these are big farmers. Like this is
big farmers, yeah.
Hundreds of hectares, many, many cows.
Yeah,
these are not small.
That's it, So we collect all that information.
Was it a long list?
Yeah, it was a long list. And then we present them like a group of farms in Portugal and Spain that are already doing these techniques. Yeah, and we present a lot of them. Well, they are not so much, but we presented the one that we know that are already with some experience, and they choose which farms they want to visit. So they choose three, okay? And we went to visit, and we invite also the association, Regenerative Association of Spain, to help us here and to give training to them. But before of the training, they went to do the visits and speak to farmers, with consultants,
farmers.
Okay, farm to farm experience. And they start to be excited. And they
why? Because they could see in their similar contacts, or maybe worse, that look, it's not just possible in Australia, where we can always argue it's different and things are different. Like you could say it's in Portugal or Spain, which means it's the same subcontinent, like it's
we try to choose like places that are really good doing it, like Porcos Natura, Herdade São Luís, Porcos Natura, for instance, but also places that the farmers are good, but the place is so bad, has Mertula, or worst.
Which is better, because then you can say, you can at least never point like, but they have it easier. No,
that's
actually
it. Because, for instance, with Herdade São Luís, it's amazing. I love what they are doing. But Montemor, it's much better than Mértola. So they were
just
quite
Montemor
excited.
Montemor is a place in the center of Portugal, 1 hour east of Lisbon, and gets a lot more rain.
Yeah, 800
and they,
millimeters.
Will, they also complain about drought, etc. For sure, like every farmer does, but it's two or three times we can get here.
So they went there, they were quite excited because the guys are very good, they are doing an excellent job, but they were still saying, but they have a lot of rain, the soils are better. Then we went to Mundos Nuevos in Spain, Extremadura.
Classes so,
a little bit more northern, but so very, very dry place. And they went
coming from
there.
Somebody that lives in Mértola, that means it's very dry.
No, it's a very dry place. It's very similar to Mértola, the landscape, very similar. And they went there last year in the beginning of the summer or end of the spring. It was an horrible year in terms of rain. And they went there and the guy had like 54 small dams and 52 of them with water, with the design.
The key line design
The key line design and the holistic management approach. And it was very, very good to see. And so these guys start to be enthusiastic about it. And then we made another workshop that we tried to collect all the information that we have. But then we discovered that we have a lot of new doubts that we want to learn. But now it was not so much skeptical doubts, but much more of things that they were enthusiastic
practical
to know
doubts.
More. Yeah. That was very nice. So at this moment, we just finished all the visits right now, this week, the last one. So we made more, they chose more three places to visit. They had more training about like planning, the grazing planning, so a lot of trainings about it, the key line, more advanced key line, and this last visit we have 60 inscriptions, so the enthusiasm just grow between the
because
community.
You didn't keep it to just the three, you
we started the first workshop like with 9-10 people, and now this visit, the last visit, we had 60 inscriptions. It was not possible to bring everybody, we were 45 people visiting, but it was very good to see how the enthusiasm about grow. And actually we have like a community of practice that we speak every day in WhatsApp and things like that, and there is 90 persons in the WhatsApp group.
And the three
group.
Original are still there? The three ones?
They are,
Also the skeptical one, but open one.
He still is.
But the two probably went, just started
implementing. What is good is now that the first ones, we have a group that are already doing things that were not in the project, by their own. They are already doing, for instance, the key line design, the starting holistic management. There are a lot. There was a lot of things that we didn't think that in the project, that is just a two-year project, that we could achieve. And actually, they are just flying.
Because they start Googling, they start connecting, they start moving. Yeah,
they are doing. And what is, and now come back to Malhadinha, just to say that in the last two visits, syntropic farming was a thing. So the other visit, we had someone speaking about trees in livestock, that they need trees, and speaking about syntropic farming. And this last visit was to Terra Mai, that is a beautiful project, that they have livestock, but they have permaculture, they have a 6 hectares agroforest, and it's not syntropic, but very interesting agroforest. And now they spend like 2 hours in that part of the visit. So the guys that was just interested in a solution for the livestock now are understanding why it's so important to have trees, why it's so important the microbiology in the soil, why, and that everything is linked. So we had to change the approach.
You took the long road.
But now we are winning these people that, yes, of course, they are not now starting to do big syntropic farming. It's not like that. But now they understand much better what we are doing and why. And they are much interested to know more about it. That we can have regenerative approach, different regenerative approach, when we have different contexts. But so they are changing the mindset, and that is much more important.
And does it give you hope about, I mean, you can see here around us how fast things can grow, and you're saying we reach things and milestones in a project of 2 years that we never imagined. And at the same time, you see climate, I mean, somebody called it climate weirding the other day, getting out of control here. We're in April and it's 30 plus. Like, what does it give you hope? Or, I mean, depending on the moment, maybe. But does it give you hope, the work you do, and at the same time seeing the struggles of climate change hitting or weirding?
Yeah, it's really difficult because, you know, for instance, in 2015, when there was a project here about climate adaptation, and with André Vizinho, that actually is the same facilitator in the project with livestock, and they have done a study with the climate scenarios, and at the time we had this scenario for the RCP 8.5. We would have in Mertula in 2070 like 300 millimeters of rain, and 2100 we would have like 200 and something, almost 300, but less than 300. But actually in Mertula, the last 5 years, the medium of precipitation in the last 5 years was already that, between 200 and something and 300. So we are in the worst scenario of 60 years ago. That is really scary, yeah. That is really scary. So here we really have to move fast. And so we have hope. We have hope also because of the fact that when we feel that we are not alone, it's really good when we see the municipalities working, trying to work with the solutions and more farmers involved. But we know that policies make a lot of difference. And so that is how we can be more effective showing the results that there is other pathway that is possible for this territory, but we have to start now. We don't have so much time, yeah, because in Mertula it was more or less like we felt like or we turn into desert or we start to do something now. And there was more or less this consensus that was quite good, because that was also a public policy, a local public policy, that they want to do something. So it was easiest for us to start the all this process, having the collaboration of the local authorities, but also other institutions, like for instance the vocational school, others that are aligned with this idea. But we know that the common farmer will not change if they don't have policies that help them to change, to do the transition. So it's really urgent that we need to pass this idea and the results of what we are doing to other scale also.
And would that be your main message to, let's say, the quote-unquote, I'm doing air quotes, but nobody sees that, to the financial world or to investors, to, like, it's possible, but we need to go fast, which most people agree, but policy is the crucial lever. What if you have to give, and for sure you've done that, presentations in Lisbon or in Brussels or in Madrid to, let's say, the financial world, what is your main message coming from Mertola in a very difficult place, which is getting more difficult but still very hopeful? What is your main message to people that are putting money to work or in charge of their money or other people's money, like the pension funds, etc., and they say, okay, give me hope or solutions or something, but give me direction at least?
Yeah, that is very interesting, because actually we've done what we've done without any fund for public policies. Yeah, and it was with private investments or by ourselves that we have done it. And so I think two important things, like, there is a lot of money in the world.
Probably too much.
Yeah. Not just public money. And so private money should really be invested in what is important and urgent in this moment. I think this is crucial. And that's how we started. And I think, for instance, the few, very few, but very important investors who believe us, they come here and they feel that, wow, because they know that they gave us very short investment and we replicated in a point that they were not waiting. They didn't know that we could use the money so well. But this is not because we are special or different, it's because it's possible to do it. Yeah, we have when we collaborate, when we know how to find partnerships, good partnerships, and others, other people who want to do the same, we really can fastly change a situation, a place. So this is very important, that two things. We have to change policies. So it is quite important in this moment, if we are talking about lighthouse farms and living labs, but sometimes it's difficult for us that are very far away from everything, very isolated, to say, well, we are that. Okay, you invented this concept, but we started very before that, doing exactly that concept. So use the knowledge that is in here. So public policies is one thing, and the other thing, it's public money, it's not the only money in the world. So it's quite important to create this net of people that is interested to change the situation, to change the world, to change the pathways that can be a personal decision, how you can use your money to do better things in the world. Yeah, and how to put that net, because and also how to bring people, how to bring resources, because it's not only about money, and that's another quite important thing. It's many of the things that we needed to do this was not money, was knowledge. Was so it was very important when we start working, and I have to say, when Katarina Serafimova start to work with us and bring also this net of people, institutions that could help us, it was so important that we have the possibility to know this or this foundation, has to know people that could bring knowledge to us. So that is really important. So resources are not just money.
And shout out to Katarina, who sometimes listens to the show. And what would you do if you would be in charge of a lot of money, let's say 1 billion euros, and it had to be invested could be very long term, but at some point it had to come back with preferably a return. How would you approach that if you would be on the investor side with, I'm not saying unlimited resources, but basically like a lot of money? And what would you focus on? Would it be, what would be your main focus areas if you had?
I think there were two things, two or three. Well, I have a lot of ideas. Let's say and what
it's
would
a lot of
be
money,
the,
so you can do a lot of ideas.
So I really would like, because that is a frustration for us, that we have just this small place. So I really would like to scale up and show that is possible, but maintaining the approach that we have, not an island doing something quite spectacular, but close by itself. So betting on education and education with civil society, but with public institutions also, because we cannot have like very amazing projects that are growing and academies and schools, but they are private and for rich people. So we would really like to scale up and see that it's possible to change, but scale up the concept of working in a regional network, working with farmers, but with local institutions, with schools, and to have a very good educational project also. And to also try to bring financial solutions for the farmers also. That is also quite important, to create some very creative and collective intelligence about money and about how could other farmers continue this work, not being dependent on public policies, but because it's the right thing and it is sustainable to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So would you then focus on the markets for them, for instance, for if we look at livestock here, to make sure they get paid better prices if they work in different ways? Or would it be mostly focused on like their transition finance? What is the biggest issue for that group of 60 or 45 like that's now super excited about wanting to change? How would you be able to help them?
Well, for instance, in this region, concretely in this region, they don't have a place where to
slaughter.
Yeah.
No bush. Yeah. It's
for instance, very simple thing.
And very simple thing, but most of the US doesn't have it either. So there's a
completely. So, how they can have
valorized? There's no value. Send it away, which is far.
It's a very simple thing, basic thing. Yeah. It's a basic thing,
but
they don't have it.
Fundamental piece.
Yeah, fundamental. Other is, and it's one of the projects that I'm also starting with HDIM, is that to have like to design. A territorial food system with the canteens. So why we don't have a regional like food shed, you see, that we could have livestock, vegetables and fruits in all the canteens in the regions, just eating our regenerative food.
Instead why? Of bringing it from.
Yeah. So we are trying to do that design in 1 year and a half. But then it was very important that not that the process cannot be stopped, but people have the tools to implement it. But it can block in such basic things like the slaughter or
processing.
Processing or logistic, because as we are in the very isolated places, for instance, logistic, it's quite expensive. Here, nobody wants to do services, transport services. You need something for your company to work, equipments and things like that, and it's double of the price, things like that. So, this regional economy, how we could be more intelligent, and for one side to have some better markets that appreciate the quality of this regenerative, but at the same time, we don't want to be a place that is doing food for rich people that can eat regenerative food. Yeah, we would like really to have all, and that's why I point a lot in the canteens, because it's the elders and the children. So it's the more vulnerable population that we have. If we could have them all eating good regenerative food, we could improve health
of course, yeah, yeah.
Much better in the future. So that would be something that I think would be very important in this region.
It's funny because it's an answer that comes more often. The basics, and I'm using air quotes again because it's not basic, but basic infrastructure, processing, distribution, just getting things from the field to the plate is not easy in many places. And in many places you have to drive very, very far, which obviously, especially with livestock, but in general, mm-hmm. hurts quality, margins, costs, everything. Yeah. And now taking your big investment fund away, I'm sorry, but giving you a magic wand, which means you can change one thing in the food system or agriculture system overnight. So you mm-hmm. have magic power to change mm-hmm. one thing only. Not don't do like Aladdin, you say no, and then I get three wishes, etc. But if you were able to change one thing overnight, what would you change?
That is a very difficult question. So if I
you
could
can think
change,
about it for
yeah,
a second, don't worry.
I could change one thing in the food system. I think one very important thing is that every farmer really should have much more knowledge about soil. So it should be a condition to be a farmer. Like, you have to know what is and how it functions, the soil. Yeah, and not what we learn in the universities. I'm talking about soil life, special, yeah. Not the physical and chemical, but they really have to learn about soil. I think that is the basic rule in the food system. But then, of course, you ask for one just, so that would be the basic. But then the problems start in the system after. So
it's a fundamental start, because you see that's really lacking with many farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The basic.
Completely. Yeah, and it's very...
They come here and they're mesmerized by, or... Because I know stories from people, like, they're scared to touch it, like, that it's... So what is the biggest surprise there?
I think especially when we work with syntropic farming, it's more or less like we feel like everything that we learn... it's not that was wrong, because it was quite important, but we are challenging everything that was...
You're going back to first principles. No, but it's a fundamental.
Yes.
Probably everything you learned in ag school.
So I came from forestry. I'm a forest engineer. And
this
so,
must be so challenging for you.
So it was, what?
Do you remember?
No,
this is a whole different interview.
This.
But do you remember your first reaction whenever you saw a video or something on the syntropic side?
Yeah, for one side... Because we see beautiful videos, like Philippe and Diana are excellent communicators, so we get quite inspired. And
forestry brain saying, no, but it cannot work?
I think it was worst when we start to see it in the land and start putting the trees. And how we can put these trees?
So close.
Yeah, yeah. How? No, but are you sure what we are doing?
Did you secretly think that everything would die here the first year?
Well, not, actually, Antonio started when he stopped to farm here in Malhadinha, there was another farm near the river, a couple that have other farm, and they proposed to Antonio if he wants to farm there. And actually it was very good, because that farm was really near the river, so he was testing. But for instance, if everything was wrong and he actually need more water, he had the water. Yeah, yeah, but and so that was the first experience that Antonio was made. And yes, I was very skeptical about it. Yes,
but it's
I was.
Good you come from that background and know the traditional or conventional, whatever we want to call it, land management world very well, because that's what you studied, what you worked in for many years. And yeah, this is very challenging for, in general, I think everybody that thinks and works in agriculture, but specifically if you have been trained, because it's very messy, it is everything we don't think about it, which is makes it very interesting. But yeah, we live in desperate times, so we need desperate experiments.
Yeah, and I think it's this. It is so complex what we are doing here, and that complexity, it's not easy to modeling, it's not easy to study. So I understand the difficulty of bringing science, but it's also absolutely urgent to do it. I think that is, we cannot risk to say, as I already have heard with other tests that I have done, in this kind of situation that we are trying and see what result, and then someone of the science say, well, you should be quiet and you should not be presenting that publicly because you don't know what was, you don't know why was went well. Yeah, you don't know if it was the mycorrhizas or if it was how you planted or if it was this consociation between this plant. You don't know. And yes, it's true, that's your job, not mine.
We are
only only trying to apply what we think are the best solutions. That's your job to do now. But it's very difficult because if we have in the same place a lot of variable conditions, yeah, it's turned out to be much more difficult. But we need to understand, and that's actually understanding what is happening
in the soil.
The soil, what is happening in there, because this complexity and diversity and life that we're seeing growing actually is completely dependent in the consociations, collaboration, symbiosis between fungus and bacteria and roots of this, all this diversity that we have here. And I think that is a lot that we don't know about it.
But that shouldn't keep us from moving fast.
Yeah.
I think it's a perfect end to this interview. I want to thank you so much for scratching the surface, and I think there's more rabbit holes to go into for another couple of hours, but we'll do that another time. Thank you so much for an introduction to the work you do and for a fascinating visit and all the work you do, obviously.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. For the show notes and links we discussed in this episode, check out our website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/posts. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts? That really helps. Thanks again, and see you next time.